your health with Dr. Burns. Hey, welcome everyone. I'd like to thanks everyone for tuning in today. This is a totally fantastic day. We have Frances with us. How are you doing today?
Very well. So happy to be here.
Yes, and we are very grateful to have you here. I know that you have like a particularly interesting gift here on Mother's Wisdom from the Other Side. And so I was wondering how you could tell us about, understand how you like written these three books. How are you able to get the insight to with the communication?
Okay. Well, basically my mother and I, besides being very close as mother-daughter, we had a very spiritual teacher-student relationship. My mother was and is my spiritual teacher. And so she guided me throughout my life on a real journey of spiritual exploration. And when she passed away in 2010, October of 2010, it was a great loss. I had always had a natural ability with words and with music, and even as a child with automatic writing and those kinds of things, which she had sort of nurtured and guided. So I did expect to have feel some kind of connection with her after she passed. But I wasn't prepared in any way for what occurred, which was 19 days after her death. I was on an airplane going to see my daughters in New York. I live in Florida. And I posed a question to her, looking across those beautiful clouds that we all love to see from an airplane. And the question was, Mother, is there any distance for you? And what happened next was the clear present awareness of her presence, and her voice just seemed to come from every direction, inside of me, outside of me, all around me, with an answer. And this conversation went on throughout the flight, which was about an hour. And then I kind of expected it with a personal experience and that it would end, but it didn't. When I got off the plane, this flood of communication with her about the afterlife state, and more importantly, about our physical life and about living our lives and about the story behind the story, I call it, here on the earth, is what she poured into me for many, many months. At times it would be her voice, at other times it would be like an instantaneous download of information or knowledge that was far beyond my ability to comprehend. And at other times it came in the form of visions and dreams. But the result was the first book, after she died in October, and the first book I released in January. It actually took me longer to type it up than I had than to write it, because I had handwritten it night and day for months. And then books two and three, gradually followed within the next 6 months.
Wow. Now, when it comes to communication with those from the other side, do you feel like sometimes that it's hard to put into words what that communication is?
In my case, it's very hard to put it into words when I simply speak about it from a personal standpoint, because I just can't even capture the intensity of it. But as far as writing it, it really wrote itself through me. And so the writing part flowed without flaw. I mean, I have the handwritten originals, and you know, there's very few cross throughs. It's just a rush of words that were beautifully articulated, that were very, very careful itself, very carefully chosen, because every word has a vibration, and the words are just a tapestry.
Yeah. So, and with that, you know, what there are times where I have found, because my father passed away almost 3 years ago, that the way he communicates with me, it's quick. I mean, it was, you know, it's like if we were to talk, say, you know, like face to face, like we're doing, it almost it takes, you know, like so much time to do that. But yet when you're communicating like spirit to spirit, it seems like all that communication is like condensed by either half
yes.
or like within seconds, but yet it's so
yes.
profound and just so, I mean, there's just so much information that's just gathered from that spirit, you know, communicating spirit to spirit.
Absolutely. And if it hadn't come in the form of words, in fact, if I didn't write it down immediately, it was lost. There was no way that I personally could recapture what those concepts were. And I'm so happy to hear you describe it that way, because I've often said to people, it felt like somebody just touched my head and I instantly knew, for example, the beginning, middle, end plot characters of an entire movie, say, in one flash second. It was like a body of knowledge could be imparted so quickly. And fortunately, it wrote itself as well. Otherwise, I would just be almost speechless to be able to just speak it to anybody. Somebody sent me a near-death experience testimony through YouTube the other day, and there was mention of this, because this person said in her experience, she looked at a ring that was on someone's finger, and she knew the history of the jewel, where it had been mined, all the people who'd ever worn that ring, all the emotions that had ever been attached to that ring. You know, this wealth of information flooded in about this object. And that really is what the experience is like when you have these insights.
Yeah. So, and the other thing too is, you know, like with these insights, is that it's so different. I mean, it's like sometimes, you know, like some people get, you know, like different insight, like where it's not words, it's a picture or it's a feeling about something. And so, and sometimes it's like, I feel like I have to go through and interpret like what that picture means.
Yes. And the pictures, of course, are symbols. We're given symbols and analogies. These three books are filled with analogies that are practical, that are humorous, you know, and some are very poetic, but I want to go into what the main theme, the main point that's the thread that runs through all these books.
Okay.
Is this statement that she made in the very beginning and which filled these books and is the main point she wanted to get across. She says, "You are not alone. You are not really even functioning as just one person. Nobody is. For you are a part of a team, a spiritual team, as close to you as breathing." These books are called The Team, A Mother's Wisdom from the Other Side, because her experience upon death was the complete awareness that she had been always and always will be a part of a spiritual team, some who are the boots on the ground and some who are in the lookout tower. And she had spent a period of time in the boots on the ground condition, and she had been here, as we all are, as a representative of her spiritual team. You can imagine, she gives the analogy, if you went to a conference, if you are a business executive and you're sent to a conference and you stand up in front of hundreds of people and deliver a presentation, and what's really happened is behind closed doors, you've been mentored, you've been taught, you've been working with your team, given information, you've gone through the troubleshooting of how this mission will be done, and then you stand up, and when you speak as one individual, you're not really yourself. You're speaking for this team that you belong to. And when you return to the business, you all sit together and you regroup. And they learn from you what went right, what went wrong, how were people, what are their needs, what are their reactions. And this is what we do. She says when you go to the other side, you return and meet with your team, and your life review becomes their life review. And everything you ever learned, everything, every gain you made, every sacrifice you made, everything you learned becomes that part of them. They are then able to absorb those lessons. So we are not functioning as individuals as we think. Our lives here are truly collective. There's a chapter called The Collective, in fact, and it's a very expansive view of the whole purpose of life.
Wow. Now, have you, before your mother passed away, have you ever communicated with any other relatives who had passed on before your mother?
Yes. Like I said, as a child, all my life, my mother, thank goodness I had her, because she helped me understand the kinds of experiences I had, which were a variety of connections with people who had passed, and many of what you would call psychic experiences, including automatic writing. She always told me, as she got older, she would say, you need to do that automatic writing that you did as a child. And I had pulled away from it because I was so young, and it kind of frightened me, some of the things that I had gone through as a teenager, and I didn't understand it. So I never went back to it. But I would tell her, Mother, why don't you write a book before you die and just teach these insights that you've gained just in your 86 years, what you've learned spiritually. And she was too tired. But after she died, she did it. She wrote her book, and I accepted because I knew it was her. I was no longer afraid, and I opened myself to the process of automatic writing and received her information. But she did guide me as a young woman and a young girl through many experiences of loved ones who communicated with me, including my mother-in-law, who died at 4 in the morning many years ago. And I knew she was in the hospital. I didn't know that she had passed. But my daughter, little girl, when my daughter who then was a little girl, came to me and woke me up and said there was a light in her room that woke her. And I got her settled back, having no idea what it was. And then I heard later in the night, I heard a pounding that sounded like it was on the walls and the roof and everywhere. I couldn't find it. I got up and looked all over the house and then went back to bed. And then later, I woke up and my mother-in-law was standing at the foot of my bed. And I was separated from my husband, and she said to me, please get my son to a hospital or he's going to die. And it was a physical apparition. I'm telling you this story because this was the most intense experience I'd ever had with someone who had passed. And indeed, when I got up and called his brother, they already had him on the way to the hospital.
Wow.
It was a very affirming kind of experience, and there were many others.
Wow, that's awesome. So now out of these three books, what concept do you consider the most important or meaningful, and which ones do readers most connect with?
Well, you know, it does change. I get a lot of letters from people, and different people respond to different things. But I think the sense of belongingness to a team, the sense of understanding how brief our life is here, and how we're part of a mission. We have our segment to do, that everything we're doing, we're leaving a legacy, a spiritual legacy. We have spiritual DNA, she says, and I was interested in your show because of the health aspect. Just like we have physical DNA, we have spiritual DNA that connects us as a lineage throughout throughout eons of time to our spiritual parents. We are products. Just as a baby is born of a spiritual, of a physical mother and father, the soul is created from a spiritual mother and father. And so we have this spiritual DNA, and we are walking this earth, and we are making vibratory deposits in the earth and in the atmosphere here. We're leaving a legacy that other teammates will come in and pick up where we left off. And so what we're doing is really wonderful. It's really important. And I think this is what gives such a different meaning to life for many people who read these books, because they recognize there's a story behind the story. Everything is a symbol, even our physical bodies. Every part of our body is a symbol of a great spiritual principle at work. And when this becomes a reality, our earthly duties and our earthly activities and the creativity we feel inside that we want to express, everything takes on a new meaning, because we are representatives of our team. What a beautiful concept, you know, gives such dignity to life. And they are behind us and around us. Many of them are right by our side that come into the earth with us. When we leave here, we share everything we've learned with them and they with us. And we are leaving vibratory magnetic forces here on the earth that they will gravitate towards and they will pick up and they'll use. So I think this is probably the thing that gives people, that excites people the most when they read these books.
Nice. Now, do you feel that everybody has an innate ability to be able to connect with their spiritual team, or do you think it takes some training?
Well, like anything, it can be magnified through training, through meditation, through acknowledging, through recognizing, feeling, acknowledging that we are part of this team. You know, all of this is going on, whether we're conscious of it or not, of course. But think how much more effective we can be when we do become conscious of it. And I think that the wisdom is out there. Everyone who's seeking comes upon it eventually. The power of prayer, the power of service to others, the power of meditation. All these things are doors. They're literal doors that open to portals, vibratory portals that are all around us. I mean, we can believe in radio waves and TV waves that are swirling all around us, you know, and yet people hesitate when they think that, well, there are these vibrations around us and portals that we can enter spiritually, even though we're standing right in the midst of the physical realm. So study and communication and reaching out with the heart, not just the mind, but the heart to one's team is a real door.
So which one do you think has more power? Do you think the spiritual has more power over the physical, or do you think some people think that the physical, you know, has more power than the spiritual side?
I'm not sure if I understand your question.
Well, I mean, it's like there are some people who are like so disconnected from their spiritual side that's all they think of is just the physical side, that they feel like that they don't have like a spirit within them to connect to others. And then there are some who are just like, oh, you know, this physical, you know, this body that I have is just, you know, I mean, it's like it's the spirit that within it that's more powerful than than these hands that I have. You know, right here and now. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's like there are some people who just aren't as spiritual, I guess, as others with being connected to that side. So what would you say to those people who are trying to find it, but they're not really there and they just don't know if they really have a spiritual side?
Well,
Okay, so Frances, as you were pondering there, what do you feel you would tell someone who isn't sure if they actually have a spiritual side?
I would encourage anyone, whether no matter what level of spiritual awareness they feel they have, whether they're extremely skeptical or whether they're absolutely convinced, to examine within themselves the one common thread that all humanity can respond to and feel, and that is the power of love. And if you can't find, if you can't call it spiritual, if those kinds of words, and let's face it, there are many interpretations of these words that are conditionally unacceptable to people. You know, what they have been through in their life has conditioned them not to accept these kinds of terminology. But beyond that terminology is the feeling, the power of love. And this is the presence and the sensation and the feeling of the soul. This is what your spirit or your soul or your true identity is love. And so if nothing else, if you can feel love and you can recognize love and tenderness, you are feeling who you really are. And begin with that. Just begin with that.
So that's a good step to start with. So because in this day and age, especially with a lot of stuff going on around the world, you know, I'm sure a lot of people aren't feeling a lot of love. You know, with some of the things that are going on with civil wars and stuff like that across the world.
Yes.
So you know, I mean, so it's just kind of reminding people to, you know, that they can still feel love no matter where they're at. I think it's a very powerful message to be sending out.
Yes, no matter, you know, I directed a chorus that I founded called the International Peace Performance for years, and it was comprised of refugee children and American children, because I had worked with refugees for 20 years. And they all sang songs of peace that I had written. We performed all over the place. And I heard stories that nobody could believe that children had experienced. And, of course, I heard their parents' stories, too, the most horrific things imaginable. But what always came through, what everyone responded to, was love. And it didn't die. The most wounded, angry person who had come through the most horrific things could still recognize it, could feel it, and could show it. Sometimes in the smallest of ways, but it's like the sun. You know, it can't be eliminated. So this is something to bear in mind, and we've all had, some of us more than others, low points and painful, extremely painful times. But that little thread of love, that little glimmer of love is always there. And this is the presence and the power of the soul, and it is linked up with our spiritual team.
Nice. So our spiritual teams help direct us with that love.
Yes, there's only positive qualities that are emanated towards us from the team. You know, and there's no point in mystifying the team too much. You know, she says these are not nameless, faceless, beings that you have to imagine in some distant way. They're your dearest ones. They are the identities, the beings that you know the best. They are your closest, most beloved ones, and you have known them for eons and worked with them in a variety of ways. Some of them are right in your midst, right, working and living with you, and others, like she says, are in the lookout tower. And the boots on the ground members and the lookout tower members, they must communicate. We are communicating. I mean, in any mission, that communication is important, what they can see and what directions we can follow. But we're also told in a chapter called Reciprocal Influences that we are not you know, robots being directed by people from above by any means. What we are doing, what we are thinking, how we are feeling is affecting them as well. We bring so much to the table. We are their hands. We are their feet. Our influence is back and forth. It's reciprocal. And it's important to remember that. To recognize our own power of influence, our sphere of influence.
Okay. Hey, we have a listener. Her name's Leslie from California, and she says that she has a question for you.
Okay, so let's see.
Yeah, so let's see if we can get her on.
Francis?
Yes.
Hi.
Hello. Hello.
Hi. I wondered in terms of healing, because I'm in a healing process with cancer right now. What do you think is the most important, if you could say this, in terms of reciprocal influences you were talking about, what do you think is the most important state to be in for myself, for my own healing, and for others?
Okay. Leslie. I'm being drawn to pick up the book itself. I have the three books in front of me, and I'm going to open it because this is what I feel I'm being directed to do. And I'm opening it to, I'm not surprised, The Collective. This is book two, a chapter called The Collective. And I'm just going to read a section here. I usually like to read a lot from the books because the books express everything a million times better than I can. Mm-hmm. Okay, here it is. Therefore, I want you to... Pardon me?
Thank you.
Okay. Therefore, I want you to suspend for a moment, any sense of your individuality. Any sense of I... Any sense of yourself as a separate body, mind, heart, and soul from the whole. I want you to feel your flesh as an appendage of the human species. Your mind as one thought in the entire body of knowledge. Your emotions as one of the countless surges of emotions in the collective emotional nature of the human race. And your state of consciousness and any progress you make as one surge of enlightenment poured into the entire ocean of collective soulness. Everything is an evolution, and you are a part of that evolution. For this reason, what you think, say, and do matters so very much. Every move you make towards mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being is a concrete contribution to the health of all forms of life on every level. It goes on to say that in the final analysis, what we offer to the universe is linked, leveraged, and intercepted in some way with all of creation. And any healing you accomplish within yourself becomes a part of the very fabric of life. And you quite literally heal others who are struggling in that same area of their lives. If you heal intolerance or bigotry, you heal another person's intolerance. If you recover from alcoholism, the energy behind that recovery becomes available to others. If you manage to forgive the unforgivable, a huge wellspring of forgiveness is released for all humanity to use. It says there are enormous vibratory spheres. You can think of them as big bubbles floating throughout the universe. And those spheres are spheres of forgiveness, spheres of love, spheres of fear, spheres of all the things that we know exist. And everything we contribute, if we contribute healing, if we contribute fear, if we contribute anger, whatever we're contributing goes into those spheres. And then other people draw from it who are attuned to that vibration. So all your efforts at healing, and of course you know that the soul is healing the body because the soul is animating the body.
Yes.
All your efforts, all your energy, everything you've learned over the last few years in your search for healing has been deposited like a bank, a deposit in a wellspring that everyone eternally will be able to draw upon.
Yes.
So it's an incredible contribution. And just keep that in mind, that nothing is wasted. Nothing has been wasted, and nothing is being wasted. The great value of what you're doing and what you've done. And I think that remembering that is a healing knowledge in itself.
I think so too. Thank you so much.
I'm so glad you're on this show. And you're so I appreciate you. I appreciate you too.
That's so true. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Leslie. Hello?
All right.
Are we still
on? Yes, we're still on. All right. Thank you, Leslie, for calling in. For that one. So I didn't know if you two were done. Leslie was done. So, all right. Well, that was awesome. That was really awesome with what you read. It seemed very powerful with that, you know, and how with everything that we learn with the spirit and stuff. And I mean, it seems like that from this, do you offer workshops for anyone who's interested? Do you offer any workshops or classes?
I don't have anything regular going on. There was a book club / workshop group that met here, and we connected for quite a while. I'm actually very immersed in the care of my grandchildren, and my life is a very practical life, but I do speak at some churches, some Unity churches have had me speak, and I've presented a lesson through James von Prague's website. Things of that nature, and of course I do these interviews too. My goal is to go forth and speak publicly on a regular basis eventually.
Hey, that'd be awesome. So how can people contact you or order your books?
Please go to my website, which is thateambooks.com. That's theteambooks, with the S on the end, .com. And you can, my email is on there. You can order the books there. And also, there's a lot of, there's some videos. You can see a videotape of my mother speaking about peace on stage a few years before she died. And her presence, the power of her presence is very healing for people as well.
Nice.
There's a lot of good information on the website, theteambooks.com.
Okay. So any last comments that you have before we close our program?
I would just simply like to say again what is said in the opening of the book. You are not alone. You are not even functioning as one person. Nobody is, for you are a member of a team, a spiritual team, as close to you as breathing. And I would encourage everyone to open their hearts to this team in gratitude and offering the moments of your day to your collective mission with them. Every morning when I wake up, unless I'm being remiss, and I don't do it, but almost every morning I do one of the meditations in the book, and the shortened version is simply to touch your head and say, may the thoughts of my mind touch your eyes and ears, and the perceptions of my senses touch your lips, the words of my mouth touch your heart, the inclinations of my heart touch your hands, the works of my hands and the steps of my feet be in accordance with the will of God and in support of my spiritual team today and forever. And then go up through your day and make momentary 30-second scans of yourself, your condition, as often as you can, maybe every 5 minutes or so, every hour or so. Step aside for 30 minutes, for 30 seconds, for 5 minutes, whatever, and simply acknowledge the team's presence and ask yourself, what is the story behind this story? All these events I'm looking at, all these emotions, all these people, all these things, what is the meaning and the story behind this story, and what can I do now to bring the greatest light to this moment? What is the highest choice of the moment that I can make right now? And move forward, because we're here very briefly. As a doctor, you know this. Life is brief and fragile, physical life. Spiritual life is eternal, and let's infuse it. You know, let's use our spiritual DNA and infuse love into the earth, so that our teammates can come behind us and walk in our legacy.
Nice.
And I will stop at that. I know you need to end the show. It's been such a wonderful pleasure to speak with you.
Yeah, you too. So, I mean, this is just awesome. We'll have to have you on again.
I would love to come again. And like I said before, the best information comes directly from the books. I would like to come back on and share some very important excerpts from the books.
Sounds good.
Directly. All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Burns.
All right. Thank you so much, Francis.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, everyone.
All right, and thank you to all of our listeners and for our callers for calling in, and we'll see you next time. Hello and welcome to Here's to Your Health with Dr. Burns. I am Dr. Burns, and I have with me from Kitty Corner, I have Elsa. And Elsa wants to talk a little bit about exercise. So Elsa, is exercise supposed to be fun?
Yeah.
Okay, what type of exercise do you do?
I just do ballet, but somehow I don't. But somehow I'm alone like 2 days because Kelly isn't at me.
Okay, so do you like to dance?
Yeah.
Is dance a good exercise?
Yeah, but I usually dance with the 12 dancing princesses.
Okay, so yes, you can dance to music or to videos. You got videos out so that you can dance to. What other types of exercise are there for kids that are fun? How about, like, is bike riding fun? No, come here. Recording right now. Is bike riding fun?
Yeah.
So what about, running's fun too. What about swimming?
Yeah.
Okay, and what about jumping? Is that fun too? Yeah. Yes? So are those all the things that we can do to stay healthy and to exercise?
Yes.
Okay, are we supposed to exercise every day?
Yes.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you very much, Elsa, for joining us on our show.